Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another interesting episode of Bias Football Takes. I am your humble host, Oluwaseun Salah. And I have two great gentlemen holding Nigeria down in terms of football and sports. I have on my right-hand side, Dotun. I have on my left, Duwim. Also, what's happening? Hello. What's going on?
AFCON is going on.
So for those that don't know, these two gentlemen are joining me today, all the way from the special country, the greatest country on earth, to some people, Nigeria. One and only. Now us. So just a quick overview of what we'll be going through today. We'll, in our usual fashion, we'll talk about the EPL weekend games, just review the games. Then we'll briefly talk about Bayern and the Kimmich problem. Then our main topic today, the reason why I brought these two gentlemen on, AFCON. Discuss everything about everything AFCON. Then for the fan favorites, Osimhen and his potential move, or I would say the club that seems to be the one that they want to fans want to get in, Arsenal. There are no EPL games this weekend, but I mean, are there EPL games this weekend? I'm not sure, but we would preview some of the AFCON games this weekend and would talk about the Nigerian match this weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, how's it going? How is Nigeria?
From my side, Nigeria is very hot. Shirtless and still struggling. It's quite hot. It's really, really hot. Quite hot.
How is business now?
Pushing. And surviving.
I see that Dotun is making good money now. I saw that he got promoted. And this gentleman got promoted. The next day, he's already hiring another company. This guy, relax. He was hiring another company. So, let's just have a quick profile. Tell us what you do in terms of football. I know you are in connection with Nigerian Professional Football League. You make reports, you go to matches, you cover some of those games live. Yeah. For those that are not familiar with you, for those that wouldn't know you on our show, since your first time joining us, can you give us a rundown of what you bring to the table as a football analyst?
Okay. Well, my name is Uzuchukwu. A lot of people call me Jiren, whichever one you prefer, whichever one is easier for you to pronounce, Jiren, it's fine. So I'm an editor with Pulse Nigeria, the brand. So, and yes, I cover a range of areas when it comes to sports. MPFL, obviously, because we're Nigerians, I'm quite passionate about anything Nigeria and football. So I am heavily invested in the MPFL and anything that has to do with Nigeria, wherever they are based, you know. So I'm also very big on youth football, grassroots. You know, I believe that the experienced players of tomorrow are the young ones of today. So I covered that extensively as well. So yeah, I think that was the 411 about me and what I bring to this particular table. And of course, a Manchester United fan, even though my heart is heavy. So yeah.
Oh, okay. I think that part of, because I was about to ask you what club you support. Because a lot of you guys are disowning United.
No, I'm not disowning United. I don't think I'll ever disown United. Yes, things are not really moving the way it should move. But we're still United fans. and we'll never stop talking about what is wrong with the club. But to move away from United, that is not happening. That is not happening. We are not just happy with the way things are. You know, that's just basically it.
What year did you start supporting United?
I think that was probably 99. I think 99-ish or something. Yeah, because I think that was the period where back then in Abuja, and DPN were just running their station or so. And they were really using... I was more of a football fan before then, you know. So, and then we moved to Abuja and DPN were just running their station, you know, in Abuja then. So they would always show United games, highlights, goals.
Yeah. So moving on to the last weekend run of games, EPL games. I feel like it was just a just run of the mill matches, nothing exciting. On Saturday, it was Arsenal Crystal Palace 5-0. I don't think there were any surprises there. Brentford, Nottingham Forest, return of Ivan Toney 3-2. Brentford won that game. Then Sheffield United, West Ham United 2-2. Bournemouth, Liverpool 4-0. So, Dotun, which of those games caught your attention briefly?
So, interestingly, I saw all of the games. But I thought the one that caught my attention the most was the Brentford Forest game. There was a lot of noise around the game because of the return of Ivan Toney, and he lived up to expectation. I thought he did very well for someone that had been out of action for 8 months thereabouts. And especially when you consider the fact that Brentford had been on a 5-game losing streak, and they managed to snap it with the return of Toney. So it looks good for them. Obviously, the 5-game losing streak puts them in and around the relegation battle, the relegation spots. But with his return, especially given the fact that Mbeumo is injured and Yawisa has gone for the AFCON, Brentford did have a boost, and it was good to see them play that way. In front of their home fans, support, everything, and. And it was also a fantastic winner from Neumopia as well. So I thought it was a very good game. And I also thought that the league did well with the timing. So there was one early kickoff, one late kickoff. So too much. I mean, it was just a 5-game weekend anyway. So no two matches clashed. We were able to watch everything one by one. So it was one a good weekend, all in all. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I missed out on the Monday game. Brighton Wolves was a boring draw.
Yeah, very boring game, actually.
I saw all the games. Yes, I saw the games. I think the one that, apart from the Brentford one, I saw that one. The one that caught my attention was Bournemouth Liverpool. So at the beginning of the game, it was kind of, I won't say balanced, but Bournemouth were just in and around the game. They were not really bringing out their heads. And this is one thing I've been telling my friends about Liverpool, and I mentioned that many times on this podcast. The way they attack you, they just keep coming in waves. They might not be able to defend properly, but they keep coming in waves so that there's no way you're not giving. It's going to happen that you concede goals. And once you concede one goal, there's potential of you conceding two more if you're not careful. So you have to take your chances if you're playing Liverpool. And I feel like they are kind of primed to, I would say, go all the way. I'm not sure if they can go all the way to Manchester City bringing down their neck, but my question to you is, do you think Arsenal... I thought I was talking about Arsenal. Do you think Liverpool can go all the way to win the league?
I won't stick my head out for them. I think City win the league. City have a number of returning players coming back right at the perfect time, and this is the business end of the season. So I feel like they'll get a run of wins together, and With Liverpool, you never can tell what you get, especially since they even have the bad news of Salah being injured as well. So it's tricky. I think they're a good side. I think they'll push. I think they can win it. I think if they don't win it, they'll push the eventual winners all the way.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to pick a favorite right now or an eventual winner or a prediction or whatever, I won't pick them.
You know, it's crazy how like all of us have just come to the conclusion that City is the like overwhelming favorite.
Okay, so by the time you look at the fact that a player like Kevin De Bruyne has been out since week one, a player like Erling Haaland has missed the last 6 weeks, and they're just, I think, 1 point or 2 points off the top. Okay, no, there's a game. There's a game in hand somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think they're five points behind with a game in hand or something like that. And they've lost practically their two best players. You also factor in Rodri's suspensions, which they also dropped a lot of points in those games, and they're still that close to the top. It means
it's crazy.
Most likely when everybody's fit, they'll still be firing as well. So it's not far-fetched. I mean, football is very unpredictable. That's why we love football. So we've seen stranger things happen, but in terms of predictions, I think there's still favorites to win this one.
Mm. So, did you watch any of the weekend games?
Yeah, I think I actually followed AFCON. I was sort of distracted, from Premier League games. I didn't even know that there were some games for because of Ivan Toney. because of Ivan Toney, it was easier to follow the Brentford Nottingham Forest game because I was really on his case, following his activity too on social media. You know, when he posted that free meme, you know, that meme with free. Sort of. So I did watch that particular game, as if I knew that he was going to score. So I think the Brentford game was the one I watched.
So Dotu, I know you are the history buff here. Why is everybody complaining about the free kick it took?
Oh, I don't see anything wrong with it, right? It's a little bit of gamesmanship. I've seen it a couple of times.
Many before. Times.
Yeah, I remember one vividly, PSG versus Chelsea. In that game, Mikel scored for Chelsea. It was Zlatan that did it. So when the ref was counting the wall, Zlatan and David Luiz just moved the ball a bit, and they moved the foam as well. Yeah, so it's not
ideal. They moved the foam.
I feel like the referees should be looking out, and if they don't spot it, man.
Because I remember that free kick Henry took, like, I think, like, twice. Because
quick free kicks are a normal thing. I don't think the complaint about this one was that it was quick. It was that it moved the ball from the original. You know, as at the time he moved the ball, the goalkeeper had set his wall and he had picked his position based on the former position of the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like the referees did not spot it, or they spotted it and they chose to let it be. So it's not Tony's fault.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. So the referees, since they didn't call it, it's their mistake, not mine. Yeah.
So, yes, let's move on to Bundesliga. I don't know if you guys have been following the rubbish going on there. How Bayern is really struggling. And apparently when Tuchel came in, he told the world that he doesn't have a six. When you have Kimmich playing, I don't know how ridiculous a manager can be to come in and say that. And also has gone to sign Dier. Can someone just explain to me what's going on there?
Well, maybe, you know, one thing we can make is that, of course, we do know that he can play two positions. So for whatever reason, Tuchel believes that maybe Tuchel just wants him to focus on playing as a right back. Or maybe he's sending out message to Bayern that, see, I don't have anybody in that midfield. Let's not pretend that I have somebody. Not because he doesn't believe in him per se, but simply because he probably believes that Bayern still needs, you know, more quality in midfield. you know, let them not just depend on Kimmich, who also plays right back. And I think for me personally, I do prefer him as a right back as well. He does get the job done at the midfield, but maybe he's the only person Bayern has right now, or maybe it's also Tuchel himself, because he's not really covering himself in glory at the moment with Bayern, especially.
So
I don't think it's much of a, but perhaps it's Tuchel's way of, it's not something I believe in. I just feel managers should be able to get the job done, whatever it is you have. If that person can do something, just get on with it until what you need is available, rather than stir up problems where there is none, you know. So I don't think they need this distraction of Kimmich. He's a quality guy who can cover up the two positions really, really well, you know. But for whatever reason, Tuchel is probably sending. I think he's taking a leaf from Jose Mourinho's table, where when you want to pass a message, you decide to make, you know, maybe like both of others, something very small.
So, Dotun, in that light, why do managers always come into clubs like this and go head-to-head with one of the, I'm calling veterans, but one of the senior players and important players of the club, considering that at some point, Kimmich was deemed to be one of the best, I would say top three midfielders in the world at some point. Why would you come into a club and say, oh, I don't have this position?
So like Duem said, it's most likely a profile issue. Profile issue in the sense that he has profiled him in another position, because I don't think he has been on the bench since Thomas Tuchel got to Bayern Munich. He's playing regardless, right? Whether it's in midfield, whether it's a right back. It's even possible that he probably wants to play a 4-3-3 formation and he sees him as an 8. Right, so it can be many things put together. But the interesting thing about Bayern Munich is that their managers rarely sign players. Right, it's mostly their footballing team, the sports director, and all of that.
CEO,
and they find it very, very easy to switch managers here and there and all of that, because the guys in the background are doing most of the heavy lifting in terms of transfer. So I don't think Tuchel's comments will mean an exit. If Kimmich is going to leave, he's going to leave on his own free will, or because the club has been able to get an agreeable deal or something like that. Because in the real sense of it, I think Kimmich is 27, 28.
Yeah? Is that young?
Yeah, he's young.
Wow.
He's young, though.
Yeah, so they're probably... He has plenty of years, and it's obviously of more value to Bayern than even the manager, because, you know, nowadays, players get 5 years deal, 6 years deal, managers get 2 years deal or 3 years deal. So exactly. So I think it's mostly a profile thing. It's not I want to get rid of this person. Is I see him in a certain light. I want him to do this certain thing, right? And what he's doing for me now, I prefer another person to do it. So I think that's what it is.
That's interesting, because after that statement, it keeps playing him, so it kind of sends a very, like, sends mixed signals to the fans and to the player himself. So, do you guys think they're going to win Bundesliga, or our guys Xabi Alonso is going to carry Bayern Leverkusen up to the end?
Well, I think
I hope Bayern.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might. I hope not. But when you consider what happened at some point, it looked like Dortmund would win the league, but somehow Bayern came from nowhere. I hope it's not. Leverkusen are really looking nice, solid, because of the Nigerian interest there, two Nigerian interests there, Teller and Fodenhuis. I hope Leverkusen can do what Dortmund has not been able to do. But like Dotu said, these guys are just like Man City. You can't write them off until it's actually done.
Also, I saw bits and pieces of their game this night. The beat Union Berlin 1-0.
1-0, yeah.
1-0.
Yeah, and I think they're back to 4 points behind Leverkusen. Mind you, they still have to play Leverkusen once more this season. And by the time you factor in squad depth, squad quality, and there's still a long run. Leverkusen is still in Europe. And all of these things. Boniface is out in April.
Yes.
I know they signed a striker. They bought a Boya Iglesias and all of that, right? I mean, it's a similar profile. It's not exactly the best player, but he can do the hold up play. He can do the link up play. It's not bad in front of goal as well. So, all the best. I actually like what they're doing there because what they've done is they've managed to create overloads in all sections of the field because of how they play, right? They play this Christmas 3 formation, the 3-4-3 with two number 10s behind the striker. And the two number 10s are their creators, their scorers are like basically 9.5s. They are hybrids. It's just like playing, I'm not comparing them in terms of quality. I'm just saying profile. Say Totti and Del Piero behind the striker. So, you know, there's creativity, there's goals, there is magic, there's magic, everything behind. Yeah, so especially with players like Florian Wirtz and all of that. So, I appreciate what they're doing. I think they're doing very well. But ultimately, there's this aura around Bayern that you know that they're breeding down. If you look at the attacking talents that they have players like Leroy Sané, Kingsley Coman, Harry Kane, Thomas Müller. You know that they're still going to steamroll opponents and all of that. So I'm just a bit, maybe it's hope. Duem says he hopes that Leverkusen will win. Maybe there's that factor too, but I just think that when push comes to shove, Bayern is a bridge too far for them to cross.
So Duem, do you think if they don't win this league now, do you think they'll be able to hold on to their stars? Because I know like it's what usually happens when a club is really doing well and turn them to Brighton or turn them to
Bayern Leverkusen.
Yeah, if they don't win the league.
That's a very difficult one. I think they have to start by keeping Xavi Alonso, which is looking very bright now, especially since Carlo Ancelotti committed his future to Real Madrid. There were speculations that Alonso would replace him while he goes to Brazil, but all that rumors down now, drain. You know, so I think the first thing for them to keep Alonso, if they're able to keep Alonso, I think they can keep most of the players they have. It will be disappointing for them to go from playing the sort of football they are playing now, the form they have, and then capitulate. It will be heartbreaking, but they should start by keeping their coach. If they do that, I think they've had a very good chance of. I don't see Boniface leaving next summer. I don't see Florian Wirtz leaving next summer. Xhaka as well, Palacios. A couple of Jonathan Tah. They have guys that can stay for another 2-3 years, maybe. So, no, I don't think they'll lose their start.
Yes, so let's move on to the main course, the main menu of today, AFCON. So, Dotun, do you think this is the best AFCON in the past 5 editions?
Okay, so it's been really enjoyable and there are a lot of factors that have contributed to that. I think the number one factor is the fact that we've grown our exports in Africa. So we have a whole lot of players abroad. You see players like... You see teams like Cape Verde having 4 or 5 foreign-based players. You see teams like Equatorial Guinea having players that have played at junior level for some other European teams. You see players like Mozambique fielding an Atletico Madrid player and all of that. So our football has grown, right? Our players have also grown as well. I always tell people my favorite thing about AFCON is that it is a leveler.
Yep.
So for players like maybe Semi Ajayi, that is in West Brom that has a proper centre back physique. That in the Championship, he just needs to drop his shoulder on a forward and he has body default. When you come to AFCON, they have your type of thing. So it's a real level. So I think that's my favorite, because that's why sometimes you see some stars struggle. Sometimes you see some unknown names blow it up and all of that. But all in all, I just feel that our football has improved. I mean, there's still the whole anyhowness, disorganization, but it's a whole lot. Like, it's improving, it's getting better. And all of that. I personally feel, I know that it's a controversial topic, but I feel like if the AFCON was played during the off season, it would be a lot better, because there'll be proper commitment from players involved. More often than not, once it gets to December and there's AFCON in January, some players start being reluctant, some clubs start being reluctant, because some people will leave. Lose their shirts by the time they come back, it's difficult to win it back. Mm-hmm. Some of them get there, they get injured, and it's just so. I feel like for us to reach full capacity, full potential, right? That's the last step that's left.
So, I mean, I was going to ask you about moving the timing of when.
So everybody says it's because of the weather, that it's really the humidity is a lot during the summer, so it cannot work and all of that, right? But I don't know in terms of practicality, because I know that during the summer most of the leagues in Africa are on, right? If you can play league football here during the summer, of course you should be able to play AFCON, right? We hosted the World Cup in the summer, right? In 2010. South Africa's weather is favorable and all of that, but there are a lot of countries that have favorable weathers as well. So it's not a matter of sidelining and all that, right? If it, say for example, this AFCON is being held in the Ivory Coast, right? In July, I will look up for it and see if their league is running. If their league can run and they can host games in their stadiums, and as far as I'm concerned, the stadiums that even host the league games are of lesser quality than the stadiums that host the AFCON. So if those stadiums can withstand whatever weather conditions are in the summer, then I feel like they can do it if they want to do it.
So, speaking of moving the timing, why do you think it's only AFCON people are telling to move the time of their tournaments? Why not the Asian competition?
Well, I think one reason, I'm not so sure about this, but I think one reason is because I think you have more Africans, the clubs losing more Africans to AFCON than you have for the Asian Cup. For most of them, these Africans are also very, very key for their respective teams. You can imagine Bayer Leverkusen, for example, losing Boniface, who came with training and then a tight injury or something. So I think that's one of the reasons, but we have to ignore this guy. I think at the end of the day, it's just like you have the domestic league in Europe. There is something that makes each of the leagues very, very different. And I think for African Cup of Nations, it is the fact that it is every winter in quotes, you know, every January, you know, you have this African Cup of Nations. I think that's what makes it very, very special for Africans and for us. So anybody trying to change it, I'm not saying conversations about moving it cannot, happen, you know, but for now, this is what makes it very special. Mid-season competition for everybody. And then when you just like look at the World Cup, they suddenly moved it from summer to December, and everybody played it.
But there's a big difference, right? When the World Cup was suspended, all exactly. So it's suspended the current running that is the problem. If leagues are nice enough to suspend their leagues.
Oh.
Yeah. So do we, who do you think is the highest goal scorer right now in AFCON?
Ah, is it the man that I've heard stories that he's very right back. But we know that he plays right back for his club in Spain, either. But for now he plays center forward for his country.
Yeah, and so wait. Before let me ask the person that is history and knows all those tidbits and trivia. Doctor, who's the highest scorer in AFCON right now?
Oh, that's Emiliano Nsue. That's the Equatorial Guinea captain.
Uh-huh. So what position does he play for his club?
He's a right back.
So I heard someone that he said he doesn't play right back, that he only played for a while or something.
Oh no, he's a right back. In fact, he was in the Spain under 21 team in the early 2010s.
Yeah, so
the team that had Mata, Thiago, De Gea, etc. etc. So yeah, it was a right back in that. I think it was the backup right back in that team. I think it was Radudal Starter. So it's mostly a right back, but it's one of those multifunctional players. I know there used to be one at UV, I think 6-7 years ago, that used to play either up top or in defensive midfield. So
crazy.
Yeah, so it's not exactly on it.
But so apparently I heard he's the highest scorer too for the country.
Well, he has scored five AFCON. I don't think anybody has scored five goals.
Man, AFCON is crazy. Yeah. Full disclosure, right? Beginning of this AFCON, I was really like enthused. I wasn't like, oh, I want to watch AFCON. But my friends were like, you have a podcast, you have to watch, or watch if you just watch highlights if I don't watch the full games. I was like, you know what? Let me try. So I started watching some of the games. I was like, wow, the quality of the game football has really improved compared to the last one. Like, you know, the last one, people were just crossing as if they were. What's the Jesus Christ cross joke? Like, he just crossed the ball all the way to nobody and it's going to Rosie. But this time around, like, it's more of like passes, even though it's like a little bit score free here and there, but the football is kind of good. The pitch is not 100% good, like the pitch that we used against the Ivorians. That was very horrible.
Yeah, we played
it was very horrible. But apart from that, even the officiating has been, I would say, 100% in my opinion. Because some of the calls, I'd be like, oh, that's a goal, or oh, that's a foul. Then when they showed the replay, I'm like, oh yeah, these guys are spot on. So I think we need to give props. I know Dotun doesn't like Africans in general.
I've actually been very impressed with the AFCON, and it's mostly for the things that we've learned, the things we see everywhere, we've been able to infuse it properly into our game. So it's not a matter of we've even seen there's two or three former Premier League coaches in the AFCON.
I know of
Chris Hutton, I know of Avram Grant. Right, they're not the top players, but at least they've learned something. They've coached a couple of good players here and all of that, and you can see one of them coaching I don't think Ghana played bad.
Yeah, they're just unfortunate.
I don't think they played bad. I think they were it was just meant to be for them. Same thing with Zambia. I don't think Zambia played bad as well, especially when you consider the teams that they played against, right?
And the quality of players, the quality of coaching.
Yeah. So it's not even like the quality of coaching was top notch. It's just that there's an obvious difference between what we are used to from Zambia and what we saw. Like, I saw Mauritania against Angola. I think that game was 3-2 or something like that. It was a very good watch.
It was a good watch.
I saw Equatorial Guinea and Guinea-Bissau as well. It was a very good watch as well. So by the time you see how there's this guy in, I think he keeps it the right back. He plays for Las Palmas or
something. Yeah, yeah.
There is Bebe in Rayo Vallecano. The things they learn in these places, right? They are able to just. That's why I even paid attention this time around, because by the time I saw the list of players that were leaving their clubs to come and play in the AFCON, then you're like, okay, it won't be so bad. It won't be so bad. So the same thing with the VAR, same thing with, we've seen all these things abroad and we had to come and infuse it here, and we are doing it very well. So it's very impressive to say the least.
So I have a question for Duim, since you are, let's move into Nigerian terrain, since you are very familiar with our football and personnel and players abroad and at home.
Dotto is too.
I know. I know Dotto is. I know the kind of question I'm going to ask you too. But for you, right, since you put on this, a lot of these players.
All right.
Someone spoke with me about how all these countries have been able to bring in foreign-born players back to the country to play this tournament. What do you think has stopped us from being able to attract this type of players back home too? And what do you think we need to do to attract them? What do we need to put in place to bring them home?
I don't know what you mean by attract. You know, because almost all the best players so far for Nigeria at the tournament have been players who were born outside. Ola Aina, Calvin Bassey, Chris Akon, what's his name again? Almost all of them.
Lukman.
So, but I think one thing with Lukman, thank you, Ademola Lukman, you know, so almost all the best players so far for Nigeria have been players born outside, you know. So, but I think if you're talking about attracting more, I think one thing we do is that we don't relate to with these guys early enough, you know. So we leave it to these guys when they blow. I always say that when you allow these guys blow in court, it makes it, if I was born outside Nigeria and you allow me to blow, chances are that I will say no to. You understand? I will say no to Nigeria. Look at Ibereze, for instance. You don't wait for people like this to blow. You identify these guys early enough. Victor Moses was allowed to England to ignore Victor Moses for a very long time before we finally made the move. You know, meanwhile, I always say this, that we are Nigeria. Yes, we want our players to be in some of the best clubs, you know, but we also need to understand that they all do not need to be in all the big clubs for them to be very useful to us. So especially those ones born outside, don't wait for them to hit it big before you go to them. Identify with them early enough. I think there's this thing Morocco did once where they set up camps in various European countries where they try to identify some of their players very early enough, you know, right from under 17 to under 20 and all that. You know, so the idea is to acquaint themselves with these guys as soon as possible. You know, because whether you like it or not, these guys are exposed to things that those down here are not really exposed to. We all want to be exposed to these things, but they already have some of these things there, you know. So I think for Nigeria, we don't do quite enough to get acquainted with them early enough. You know? So, and when they blow like somebody, was it Ibereze, for example, or Michael Olisa, it's difficult for them to want to pick Nigeria. They want to stay with where they played a lot of youth football, you know. But I think we've done fine. We just need to incorporate more of the home-based guys as well. We've neglected the home-based guys too, where we have a lot of very good talent. Because if you check, apart from those born outside, other ones to come from Nigeria. So there's talent here in Nigeria and we need to do something about that.
So, Dotto, do you think, in that last same vein, do you think Nigeria is suffering from too much talent?
No, I don't think so. And my reason is very simple, right? We are a very top-heavy team, right? Most of the players that we have that we think are good are mostly concentrated in the top half of the field.
Oh, wait, but you know, there's a reason for that. Going on,
no, of course, all of us wanted to be strikers. Because when we're younger, and mostly,
you want to score.
I want to be a striker. I want to be a striker. So we are reaping the reward of that. But that's not even the problem. So the problem is, if you say you have a big pool of talent, then you have talent all around the squad. Like, yes, I know it's an overkill, but let me just use France as an example. So if you look at the type of centre-backs that France have, they have Konate, they have Todibo, they have Saliba. Varane is 30, he can retire in peace. Do you understand? They have they have the other, the twins, they have Lucas Hernandez, they have a lot of people, they have Upamecano, they have Disasi. Do you understand? It just in center back. Now, if you go to the right back, they have a lot of them. If you go to the left back, they have a lot of them. Players like Lucas Digne really get a look in, right? If you go to midfield, it's the same thing. So that's why you see there is quality everywhere, right? For us, going into the tournament, going into this AFCON, a lot of us didn't know who Stanley Nwabali was before the tournament.
Correct.
Except you followed the local league and you.
Yeah.
I love Posero's movements because I know that he, in November, October, November, he went to South Africa to go and watch him live. So that's why I even knew him. I didn't even know him when he was in Nigeria. Do you understand? So when you see too much talent, if you look up front and you see Osimhen, Boniface, Umar Sadiq, Lukman, Kelechi, Chukwueze, Onatu, even the people that missed out, Emmanuel Dennis, Gift Orban, Nathan Teller, then you see that is talent. But by the time you do the same metrics all around the field, you see that, I mean, we took only 3 midfielders or 4 midfielders. So you know that we don't really have midfielders and all of that. So I don't think we are suffering from if we are suffering from anything, it's back to ripping 20 years ago, where everybody wanted to be a striker.
You know, yeah. growing up, we didn't even know like the idea of passing the ball, that somebody wants to be a midfielder and wants to pass the ball. All we wanted to do was dribble and score. It's crazy.
No, we did.
You did? They taught you?
Yes. Like, if you, I don't know if you remember Kanta, where you play with buttons and all this stuff. The best players we are midfielders. Not really strikers. You know, yes, everybody wanted to be a striker. You wanted to score goals, you know. But if you notice, we always wanted our number 10. The number 10 was always known as the best player, you know.
That knows how to dribble.
Yeah, that kind of thing, the passes and all that, you know. But like what you said, at the end of the day, we've always known who scored the goal. And I think that was that has taken a big toll. So even with our coach, he probably believes that all he needs just as many forwards as possible. I mean, he was ready to go to Nations Cup with just 3 midfielders, because whenever we put Iwobi in there, Iwobi for me is a forward. You know, yes, he can play in midfield, you know, but if you take him out, we're going to the Nations Cup with EBD, Onyeka, and who's the other guy? I think it was just EBD and Onyeka that we really central midfielders we had. You know, yes, Onyeka, and we know that this man does not really trust Onyeka that much, even though Onyeka, for me, is our best defensive midfielder at the moment. You know, so he was okay going to the Nations Cup because it's three before Ndidi's injury, unfortunately, injury forced his hand. He now brought in Al Hassan. So imagine Ndidi was fit, Al Hassan will be watching from home. He will be watching from home, you know. So Al Hassan Onyedika, two of our brightest little talents, will not really get looking. Simply because somebody is, and then we have 10 forwards, bro.
Okay, so Dotu, my next question is, what are our chances of getting all the way, going all the way to the final? I'm not even saying winning it, because winning is another kettle of fish, but what are our chances? What are our chances going all the way to the final?
So, interestingly, if you look at our squad, you assume that we'll get the most joy up front, but the reverse has been the case. We've had the reverse Nations Cup. Our best game so far in my opinion, has been against Ivory Coast, and it was mostly because we were defensively astute, right? As far as I'm concerned,
yeah.
I think that match was played on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Was it on Monday?
It was on Monday.
Yeah, that match was played on Monday. From Monday to now, if that match had gone on, Ivory Coast were never going to score.
No. So that was Guinea-Bissau. Guinea-Bissau was on Monday.
Monday, okay. So the other one was on Thursday then.
Thursday,
yeah.
So, in fact, even makes it better. So, from Thursday to this Wednesday, that's 1 week. Ivory Coast will never go to score, right? We were in control of that match all the way, right? You could see stellar performances from Bassi, from Ekong, from Aino. Even Semi Ajayi and Zedu Sanusi that I did not call, they had very, very solid performances. Same thing with Onyeka. And Stanley Nwabali looked very, very confident. And considering what we've seen in goal for the last 2-3 years, error-free. Do you understand? Mm. Now, going into the Nations Cup, I assume that the players that are going to take us as far as possible will be Osimhen, Lookman, etc., right? But if we're going to get anything from this tournament, we have to remain like airtight at the back, right? Because we've gone behind just once and we equalized in 1 minute. I don't think we have the composure to break down opponents in a deep block, especially in the knockout round. So I fear for us if we go behind, especially against a good team. Do you understand? So I feel like if our defense remains the way that it has been so far, goalkeeper remains the same thing. We created a lot. I think we've missed the most chances in this AFCON. So we've been very, very, very we've missed a lot of chances. We've been lacking talent.
You know what that sounds like?
What does it sound like?
What team would we support? What club would we support?
Oh, that's story for another. That's the most story for another. But and it's not even about the chances missed. So there are also bad decisions in the final shot. So it's not even, sometimes the shot does not even go off. Somebody just makes a wrong pass or something like that. So if we get it right and we remain the way we are at the back, then we can progress. I know that the draw was not kind to us, so play Cameroon next.
Yes.
I think after Cameroon, it's going to be another tough opponent or something like that as well. So it all boils down to more of the same. I think Posero has struck gold with his back five. So even if we do not exactly have a quality back four or a quality defense line, we've made up for it with quantity.
Mm.
So, and these players are even used to playing in those systems at their club. Calvin Bassey has played in the back five multiple times for Fulham. Olaino does that all the time with Forest. Zedu Sanusi does it with Porto in some games. Semi Ajayi does it for West Brom in some games as well. So it's more of the same at the back. Get better in front, then we'll hope for the best.
Mm. So Duim, apart from Nigeria, which country do you think will go all the way?
Which country? Apart from Nigeria.
Yeah.
Are you keeping Senegal? I think Senegal they've been my favorite, so I think they will defend the title. They can defend the title. For Nigeria, somehow, I hope we go all the way. But the performance so far for me, defense has been really, really good. Maybe because we've been playing quite deep and all. It has worked so far. It's a cup, so we can just house your way to the final if you can. So if the defense can remain the way they are playing right now, and then the attack, at least, I don't think we look so brilliant in terms of performance and all that, but we've created the most chances, we've missed the most chances. So perhaps we should start putting those chances. Maybe if we put one or two extra or three, because we're about to beat teams that are, for example, we are playing Cameroon next. Yes, they struggle to get in, but they've scored more goals. That is a big problem. So if we meet teams that actually know how to score, how are we going to contend them? You know, so we need to also show them that we can score. I mean, we've not played well, but we created chances, which is a good thing. You know, so let's put one or two of those goals so that teams can actually be scared of us. Because that's something I like to see in teams that I support. I believe that one thing about football is that it can be very psychological. So when, for example, everyone is scared of taking on Senegal right now, not because they can't make mistakes, but because these guys can punish you at any time, you know. So when you have that psychological advantage that, see, we can punish you and punish you at any time, you know, it can really, really help. So when I watch teams that I support and I don't see that, it gives me concern. So for now, I do not think Super Eagles look like a team that can punish, you know, even though we created situations where we should be able to punish teams. If we can sort that out, I think Nigeria can, apart from Senegal. Which other country? I think there's a dark horse somewhere. There's a dark horse somewhere. I don't know what Terazin is planning. I don't know what Verde is planning. You know, but see these two teams, I think they can spring surprises alongside DRC Congo. DRC Congo has played some of the best football in AFCON, and they play Egypt next. If they can get past Egypt. So, yeah.
So, Dotun, why do you think, because I noticed a trend, why do you think the Northern African countries are not doing well as previous competitions?
Okay, so if you, like I said, AFCON is the leveler. Right? Most of these guys believe that what they've used to bamboozle us in the past is mostly technical security, right? I think the quality of their leagues is better than ours. Right, they've paid attention. They've been paying attention to it since, while we were just being physical and energy and all of that. They paid attention to details, and the rest of Africa has caught up. It's that simple, right? I saw Algeria play against I saw Algeria lose to Mauritania yesterday.
Mauritania, it was crazy.
Yeah, I watched the game. I watched the Morocco Zambia game today as well. Right. I mean, Morocco is levels ahead of Zambia, but Zambia still managed to hold. It was 1-0 at the end, that it was even a scruffy goal. Do you understand? So I saw Egypt's Cape Verde. I saw Egypt's Mozambique. I didn't see the Egypt's Ghana game. I was busy that day. Right. And these teams can't keep up. So that's just what happened. It's just before there was a big gap, now the gap is smaller. That's just it. It's nothing. Football is mostly an humbling experience. When you just think that you're the best and you're not making effort to widen the gap between you and the people behind you, eventually they'll catch up. To get into the top is very, very easy. It's staying there. Yeah. So
It's crazy how Algeria just... They're last in their group.
Again, AFCON is a lever.
But you know me, I'm kind of happy though. Like
Algeria,
I'm
happy that they're struggling. Okay, no, I didn't watch the Algeria Angola game. I watched the Algeria Burkina Faso game. They should have lost that game. They were very lucky to pick up a point.
Wow, that's crazy. So we have Algeria out. We have Tunisia out. We have Egypt winning. Egypt struggling to make the next round. Wow. Then Morocco too. So do you think Morocco is good enough to win it?
Yeah, definitely. Before the tournament, they were even my favorite. So I'm not surprised by what they're doing so far.
I watched Senegal's games and I feel like those guys, there's just something about them, the way they play.
If they don't meet before the final, they'll play the final.
So Morocco, Senegal, final. Because the way Senegal plays, like the play is not crisp, but as William said, they know how to score, they know how to punish you. Very effective football. It's crazy. So speaking of effectiveness, Osimhen has not been able to, I would say, capitalize on a few, what's it called, on the chances that he's been given. Do you guys think, do you think it's enough reason for Arsenal not to want him anymore?
Well, cool. If what is enough reason?
Osimhen, you know, he hasn't taken, I mean, I've had a lot of Arsenal fans message me that, oh, they're not sure of Osimhen. They're not sure about him coming to Arsenal anymore. Do you think his performance, or I would say his performance, because he has performed to me above average, he's been okay, but his chances, conversion rate has been very low. Do you think it's enough reason for Arsenal to want to back out signing
people him? That have Gabriel Jesus, in case they are leading the attack. Oh my god, anyway. Well, you know, fans will always react. Yes, we need Osimhen to be doing better, in terms of the chances he's had so far. But what I will always say as well, it's not like he doesn't miss chances, even at his club. Or is there someone they are going to sign? I think Haaland already has 18 chances, big chances made this season in the Premier League. You know, so these guys, all these so-called elite guys, would always miss a lot of chances, basically because they're always there. You know, so but the good thing is, I don't know if I even wanted to go to Arsenal, but Arsenal dominates a lot, which will work very well with Osimhen. They're a very dominant side, and that should work with Osimhen's favor. So they're always on the ball. So if they are looking at what is happening at AFCON and using that to judge him, well, they are welcome to do that. You know, I don't think Nigeria has dominated enough for me, because I always want to see a team like Nigeria controlling things, dictating play, which is what Arsenal does, you know. So that should help Osimhen. But for now, AFCON is not really, AFCON is like it's a cup competition. Let's not forget that. I'm not saying it's very difficult, you know, very difficult, and it's more physical than anything else. So I think he would do well at Arsenal, but if they don't want him, it's fine. I mean, Osimhen is not begging Arsenal to come. Arsenal should be begging Osimhen. Arsenal should be begging Osimhen.
So let me even chip in. If you look at the best players that this continent has produced, so let's say right now at the moment, good AFCONs as Salah had.
Zero.
Drogba
had. I'll say one. Because he went all the way to final.
So Arsenal should be begging Osimhen, because they are the ones who need the centre forward. And you know, I've said this thing right from 4 years ago, when Osimhen was still trying to find his way from V and all that. That this guy is like a 20 goals plus striker.
Yes.
Arsenal don't have that. You know, there is no doubt that Osimhen has everything to supply you 20 goals. In the league alone, so and he's quite suited for the English league. When Napoli lost Spalletti, I was like, okay, it's going to be a difficult season for him, because I looked at the appointment of Garcia and I'm like, this is an inferior
manager,
replacement. So he's going to affect this guy. When they appointed Spalletti, I knew immediately. I said to myself that if Osimhen did not blow under Spalletti, he will not blow
on anyway anybody.
Yes, you know, so it was quite clear. So I think Arsenal play very good football, that should suit us, but they should be the one pushing.
So Doctor, you were saying something about our
I was saying that we play different ball here. You'll rarely find people that are doing well in Europe and they did well in the AFCON as well. Maybe you see one person that does well in Europe and he has one good AFCON. But to see someone that's
this guy don't come out again.
His network is giving him problems.
Nigeria, and it's problems. But yeah, I understand what he's trying to say, because it's very rare for you to find someone, a player in that has had good. It's crazy because. And this happens a lot of times, even in European Championship too, where they will do very well in that particular season,
and there's, somebody there's all eyes them on them. After.
Yes,
and somebody's like, you realize you both like... bomb. So it happens a lot. So I'm not 4 weeks or 3 weeks does not define a player, right? Mm. Yes, it can help his legacy. Yes, it can reduce. From his legacy and all of that, but it does not exactly define the player. I think Osimhen has 7 goals in 13 games this season for Napoli in the league, and they've not even played well. Do you understand? Yeah. So it doesn't mean... I mean, obviously, he should be doing better, because this statement will not be complete without pointing out the fact that he should be doing better, but...
Doing better, yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, man... Also, I don't think... this is not a job. I don't think I still have...
the money.
Right. I think there are only 3 teams in Europe that are capable of paying that money. I think one will not be interested in him, and that's Real Madrid. Right? The other 2 are Chelsea and PSG.
You've forgotten your foolish club.
United don't have 100 million to spend on any player at the moment.
Okay.
What United is going to... I know it's off topic, but... And I cannot exactly see the future, but I feel like United is going to look for bargains for the next 2-3 years and settle down.
Jesus Christ.
That's a story for another day. So I think Todd Boehly is a businessman, and businessmen always know how to find their way around financial restrictions. I'm a banker, I know these things. The money will come out.
Money will come out.
By crook. And they would find a way to say that they are still within FFP restrictions and all those things. So I think Chelsea can pay. I think Madrid can pay. I think PSG can pay. So but I don't think Madrid will be... I think they have this Mbappe obsession. And
yeah.
I don't think Perez wants an African guy to come and lead this line for the next 5 years or something like that. So,
Speaking of that, right? Where do you think Osimhen fits in perfectly?
I think he will end up at Chelsea.
No. I mean, think about where he's going to end up.
So, fits in. I think it would fit in better at Chelsea. The way Arsenal have set up their team, right, they want to play I class strikers as 2 type of strikers. It's just in my head. So there's some strikers you play through, and there's some strikers you play to, right? If you watch someone like Erling Haaland, City intentionally remove him from their build-up phase and all those things. It's not that he cannot do it, because we've seen him do it at Dortmund, we've seen him do it at Salzburg, right? He can play ball, but he's not the best at it. So City play to him, just finish the chances and get away with it. Now, if you watch someone like maybe Ivan Toney, maybe someone like Harry Kane, their teams play through them. You see how they interplay with people around, link up here, knock here, and all of that. I think the system that Arteta has built in Arsenal, they need a striker to play through. They want somebody that can come out, link, and leave spaces for the likes of Martinelli and Saka. Because as far as I'm concerned, those are the 2 people that he has the most hope in. Saka and Martinelli. So if you play a striker for them to play two, it might be funny. It might end up being... Because if you watch Arsenal's games, the people that take the most shots are the wide men and maybe Odegaard. So it's not like they are creating that. I mean, they create. But if you bring in someone like Osimhen, we've seen the way he played at Napoli last season, where it was getting on the end of multiple chances, the play ball into the channel for him, they'll trust him one-on-one against defenders. That's not what Arsenal strikers do now. You're more likely to see a Nico Jackson do it. You're more likely to see a Cole Palmer in false nine, or Sterling in false nine do those things that Osimhen is really good at. So I think that in terms of structure, style, and the player's best abilities, I think Chelsea will fit him better. Doesn't mean that Chelsea is, Chelsea is not a better team than Arsenal at the moment, right? If you want to win something now, where is the better place to go to? I think it might be Arsenal, but in terms of
Arsenal will win something?
Arsenal is in a better position than Chelsea at the moment.
But Chelsea is doing well in, is it FA Cup or Carling Cup?
The Carabao Cup, bro. Yeah. I say something all the time. And it has cost fights in plenty of places.
Yes.
If you don't FA Cup and Carling Cups, they are good to have. They are good to win. They don't necessarily point the direction you are headed as a team.
But
you know what's funny? You know what's funny? The manager who's also emphasized this point just got to the final.
Exactly. And he said he wants to win. What's wrong with you?
So yeah, let me explain very well so that I'm not misunderstood. Now, a league is 38 games and you have to play everybody around. The Champions League, you're playing against the best teams in the country and outside the country. Do you understand? Now, in the FA Cup, it's mostly one, lock of draws, two, largely rotated squads, right? And people don't necessarily take it serious up until maybe you get to the quarterfinal or semifinal. That's FA Cup and Carabao Cup, right? So if a City team, for example, decide that they want to take the Carabao Cup seriously from day one, they probably just bulldoze their way up to the final. It doesn't tell you how good they are. What tells you how good they are is their performances consistently in the league and when they were up against the big boys. Now, a trophy is a trophy. If you win the Carabao Cup, you've won something. Nobody can take it away from you. My point is, it does not point the direction in which you are heading. If I win the league, I can say I've turned the corner. If I win the Champions League, I can say I've done something spectacular. If I win the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup, I've won a trophy.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. And I'll use, since three of us are United fans, I will just use two United cycles for you. Or three different United cycles. The first cycle is Van Gaal, where United won the FA Cup. He did nothing for United. In fact, he got sacked. The second one is when Jose won the Europa League and the Carabao Cup. The next season, he won nothing. He finished second, right? He said that season that he finished second was a better season than the one before.
Season.
Right, yeah. Because United were, in quotes, consistent in large periods of time. Do you understand? Now, the third one is now. Last season, United won the Carabao Cup, and they've gotten worse than they were last season. So those cups, they are good to have. Don't get me wrong, and don't misquote me. They are good to have. However, Arsenal did not win anything 2 seasons ago or 3 seasons ago, but you can see their performances are getting better. They're not there yet. They might not get there yet. But their league performances is speaking that, oh, okay, something is happening here. If they've won the FA Cup last season and they've done the rubbish that they've been doing in the league for 6-7 years ago, I won't take them serious. I'm only taking them serious because of the consistency they've shown at the top level.
So I will not argue against what you said. It makes perfect sense. But if there's a club that makes that jump out of nowhere,
Chelsea can win anything, of course.
That's what I'm like.
Even okay, they're a bit lax now because Roman had gone. But when Roman was there, every match is a must win. Every competition, you must put in your best. Whenever they drop for, I think they've won the Europa League twice. They won one in 2013. They won one in 2019. And in both seasons, I think they dropped out of the Champions League group stage or something like that.
Yeah.
So imagine dropping out of Champions League group stage, going to the Europa League, and do you understand? It means that they still took it seriously.
Seriously.
Yeah, so that's Chelsea for you. Whatever. Even Pochettino knows he needs a cup.
He knows now. What I'm saying,
it's not necessarily to say I have arrived. It is
the most job
from my back.
To stay on his job. Yeah,
exactly. So he helps, no doubt. He helps. But if he wins this Carabao Cup, it does not mean that he has now arrived as Chelsea manager. There will still dent his mouth in the league.
Okay, so let's start previewing the round of 16 in AFCON, since we're not interested in foreign football right now. So we have Angola playing Namibia. We have Nigeria play Cameroon on Saturday. So what do you guys think? Nigeria, Cameroon? Joey?
Yeah?
Nigeria, Cameroon. What do you think?
Algeria, Cameroon.
Nigeria, Cameroon. Stay focused. AFCON.
Okay. I think it's quite dicey. I've never been scared of Cameroon at this particular stage. If it was a final, I probably would be very scared that something might happen. So I think Nigeria will get over that. It might not be pretty, but I think Nigeria might just do enough to make it to the last eight.
Yeah, but
I've never been scared of Cameroon at this point of AFCON at any time.
But it's Cameroon, though. Eternal rivals.
Yeah. Yes, it's Cameroon. Now, that's why I said at this stage, any stage that is not a final, I will not be scared of being on to the level. In fact, I think I should go dig up an article I wrote one time that we're about to play them. Like, I outlined, I think, a couple of reasons why I was too sure that Nigeria will beat Cameroon. And at the end of the day, we defeated them. You know, so I might go dig up that thing on my Facebook because... Yes, we have that. We've probably lost more finals to them than any other team.
Yes, we lost three.
Yeah, exactly. So, but if it's semi-final, quarter-final, round of 16, I'm always quite confident that we would give them a hard time. So, I'm not exactly scared. The only thing is that I wish Nigeria would play really... You know, sometimes you can play well and not win, and other times you play dirty and
win. And you win.
You know, yes. I always like to complain with the win. I might not like what I watched, but I will still let you know that. See, yes, you won, no, it's fine, but I expected more. So I prefer to complain. I don't like complaining with the kids because a lot of people do not get it. Mm. Even when they win and you complain and point out things, they feel you're not enjoying the victory. Meanwhile, you know that things can be better. You want things to be better, but I always prefer completing with the win. So I think Nigeria will go through.
We have to win, though, because the whole of Africa will troll us. Because we're trolling the whole of Africa. We have to win. Because Ghanaians are waiting for us. Even Cameroonians are waiting for us.
We cannot afford not to win. Let's just go all the way. Because it will not happen.
The whole Africa will just, but then Angola and Namibia. I've not seen any game Angola and Namibia has played, so I can't really say much about that.
I think that is anybody's game. You know, one thing with all these guys is that I think they've done okay at the tournament. Maybe I would just. I think Angola, based on experience, Namibia, they've already made this. And that might just be okay for them. So I think based on experience, Angola for me, yeah.
Then
I don't think Namibia would pull off more surprises. They've already done more than enough, but I can't write them more.
Because of the experience, that makes sense. So Equatorial Guinea versus Guinea, Egypt.
One of the games. Yeah, one of the games of the round. Equatorial Guinea. Can Guinea stop them? Those guys are on rampage and they are quite high on confidence. I don't know. Can Guinea? That's quite difficult to say.
The Battle of the Guineas.
See, I'm going to stick with... I think I'm going to stick with Equatorial Guinea. If I perish, I perish.
But you know, Equatorial Guinea is more experienced than. Sorry, Guinea is more experienced than Equatorial
Guinea. Guinea is more experienced than, yes, but I'm going to go with form. I think Equatorial Guinea is in form right now, and they are playing quite well, very compact, and scoring goals. As long as Nsue is fit, I will stick with them, like I said. Whatever happens. There won't be any shame if they don't win, you know, so. Equatorial Guinea to go through. Guinea can go home for beating Nigeria at that point.
Then what about Egypt, DR Congo? Democratic Republic of Congo
dominated Morocco, who are in better shape than Egypt. But there's this never say die attitude Egypt has that is always leading them. So I think DRC play, like I said before, they played some of the best football so far, but they are not taking their chances like Nigeria. You know, they didn't take the chances against Morocco. If they did, they would have defeated Morocco. Probably Morocco will be out of the tournament right now. You know, so I feel they will remain the same against Egypt. But the question is, can they make these chances count? There's no Salah now, you know, so there is no X factor to focus on or to instill fear in them. So I don't know if that will be enough to get them over the line, but see, they are my in-laws, you know, so.
So, funny story, I have someone that comes a lot on the podcast, and his girlfriend is from Cape Verde. So, and now they are facing Mauritania. What do you think is going to win that game?
Cape Verde.
Easy, right?
Yeah, that's easy prediction. I think, like Namibia, Mauritania, you know, they've already made history. I think they can comfort themselves with that. They've won their first game, got into the round of 16 for the first time. I think that is enough. So, Kivredi, it will be a shocker. It will be a shocker for Kivredi to lose
that game. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it will be a shocker. You know, I don't see Mauritania doing back-to-back shots. You know, producing two of the biggest shocks of AFCON. You know, I don't see it happening. They've already sent Algeria packing. For them to add
another one, yeah.
Back-to-back, I don't see it.
Then the game of the round, Senegal, Ivory Coast.
Senegal, Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast sneaked in. I think the only good thing about Ivory Coast is that I've seen some pretty, pretty girls from Ivory Coast. bro, one more chance to see them with the other. I don't see this Ivorian team stopping this moving trend called Senegal. I don't see. Bro, this guy is just trash 4-0 by Equatorial Guinea. You know, yes, I know football is not mathematics. You know, no two games are the same. But, bro, it's Senegal. You know, so, like I said, the good thing is the Ivorian ladies are back. We get to see them one more time.
Someone made a trade on Twitter on the African women.
Women, yes. I told myself that next nation cup I have to attend, bro.
You know, married. Anyways,
I'm not married. I was
attend. It's enough. I hear you. Mali, Burkina Faso.
Eagles. Mali, Burkina Faso. I think Mali will take that. Mali has been really.
I'm sorry, you missed something. So you missed something when you're talking about the Senegal Ivory Coast game. So you guys know that Ivory Coast have fired their coach, right?
They did. Yeah, they fired their coach.
So who's going to coach against Senegal?
Wow. They did. Wow, I missed that. Wow. That's crazy. Wow, I missed that. How did that happen? Wow.
They're not smiling.
Morocco.
So maybe the assistant to take over.
Morocco, South Africa.
This is quite an interesting game. Morocco.
Okay. So Dotun, you did not say your 2 cents or Nigeria, Cameroon. This man has left again. Keeps going in and out. Anyways,
I think it is. network or something.
Yeah, network is bad. Anyways, it's been a topsy-turvy episode because this is what we face when we try to record with people from in Nigeria. But at least we made it happen. We made it happen. So thank you. No, it's fine. We'll do better. We'll do better next time. Hopefully our listeners will bear with us. We tried to keep it together.
Can you hear me?
Doctor, are you back?
Oh, okay. Yeah, can you? So I think we'll beat them. I think we'll beat Cameroon, right? The way they set up and the way we set up plays right into our hands, right? They have a more dominant shape. So they tend to step out and leave spaces in behind. And that is what the type of forwards that we have, like players like Lookman, players like Simon Moses, players like Lookman, players like Osimhen. They want to get in behind the defense. They don't necessarily want to play in front of the defense. So if we hold our own in midfield and in defense, and we can be very, very decisive on the break, I think we'll beat them, and I think we'll beat them easily too. My hot take is Equatorial Guinea have come to the end of the road. I think Guinea is going to beat them. Knockout football is unforgiving, and for the people that have played their hands in the group stage, I think everybody's a lot more wary about them, and it's easy to shapeshift to accommodate their brilliance. So we've seen Equatorial Guinea. I don't think they can. You know, against Nigeria, we were surprised, right? Because we were not expecting anything from them, and we played 1-0 with them. In the second game, I think they're better than Guinea-Bissau. In the third game, I think Ivory Coast just got... Ivory Coast have been bad in the World Cup, I can't lie. But they just got... is it reckless? At 1-0, there was a game to be played, and they just threw everybody up front with reckless abandon and all of that, and they got properly embarrassed. But I think that since it's a knockout game, I think everybody's going to be a lot more careful. And we'll actually see aspects to their games that we've not seen. I was going to say the same thing with Cape Verde, but I think they are a lot better than Mauritania. I think Mauritania is going to stress them a lot. Because I watch Mauritania, Algeria, I watch Mauritania, Angola. Mauritania is going to stress Cape Verde a lot. So they have this left winger that is right-footed, that has a mean shot on him. I mean, proper mean shot, right? And their goalkeeper is very, very, very good. So they're going to stress Cape Verde. I think the other games are straightforward. I think Angola will beat Namibia. I think Egypt too, end of the road. Who else is playing? Morocco beat South Africa. Senegal, Ivory Coast, done in the first 20 minutes. which Mali team? Please remind me.
hold on, let me check. So Mali's.
I'm looking at Mali with the side of my eye. They are one of
Burkina Faso.
They're playing Burkina Faso. That's going to be tricky. That's very tricky because Burkina Faso. Because I was going to say that. I think for semis, if they don't meet before the semis, I've really not looked at the brackets. Right, I think Senegal can go all the way. I think Morocco can go all the way. These are teams that are disciplined on and off the ball, and they have quality to match, right? So I was going to say that the teams I'm looking at with the side of my eyes are Mali
and Burkina Faso.
Yeah, that's me being a neutral. As a Nigerian, we are winning the cup, but but to look at it in its entirety, I think that those four teams that are called are the four teams that can actually give us proper problems. If I add DRC to then those are the teams that can give us problems. I think any other person that we meet will be mostly fine. But watch out for something. The Morocco-South Africa game. If South Africa go in front, Morocco, they're finished.
Wow.
I watched South Africa waste Tunisia's time today for 90 minutes. They passed the ball around. And they will counter. And when Tunisia is running back, they will go back to their post. They wasted their time for 90 minutes today. So if they go in front, you are going to see North African time wasting from the South Africans. Yeah.
Love it. Anyways, thanks guys for showing up all the way from Nigeria and staying awake. hopefully next time we speak, your internet will work better, and
and naira to dollar too will be better.
Amen. Amen. That's a very good prayer. But thanks, guys, for showing up. Hopefully would speak. I think after the next two rounds, I'll have you guys come back and let's review AFCON. Let's continue reviewing and let's try to export and advertise our football. It's not every time we talk about European football. Maybe one day too, I'll bring you guys back to talk about the Nigerian Professional Football League, NPFL. I don't want to change it from is it NFL?
NPFL. Yeah,
NPFL.
NPL, Nigeria Premier.
It was NPL before, Nigeria Premier.
NPL, yes. Yeah, like, you just keep confusing people. But anyways, thanks, guys. And I really appreciate it. All right.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Yep.